the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm Chris Prytower. Today, we continue our series on planning for your retirement using a different perspective, rather than just focusing on a financial number, which is commonly used by the financial industry. And as we've discussed here over the last few weeks, it's more about you, your lifestyle, and determining whether you're overfunded, maybe constrained or underfunded. This should determine more of how you plan and the strategies you use to plan and make your retirement plan more secure. So on today's program, we're going to look at retirement risks, risks that are particular to you during retirement. And when you think of risk, you think of stock market fluctuations. Maybe the funds or stocks you own go down in value. But there are much greater risks that lie out there that you need to be made aware of and plan for them and try and mitigate much of what is possible. So Jim, explain the retirement risk matrix, which is much more complex than simple market or investment risk.
Yeah, when we talk about risk, Chris, you mentioned the one that is most commonly thought of by most individuals, and that's, you know, that's investment risk. The market can go down as it did in the last quarter, where investors became reacquainted with the word risk, and they think of maybe losing income, those kind of risks. But there are 9 specific risks that a retiree will face throughout their retirement years. Now, they can be classified in 2 kinds of grids. From a broad stroke perspective, let's boil it down to 3 that are basic: political risk, business risk, and of course, investor risk. Those risks can be further classified in something we call systematic risk, which is somewhat predictable, which would include political and business risk. What can happen to the market? What is going on with the Fed or in Washington? And then there is what we call unsystematic risk, which can be classified as behavioral or chance. Something happens that you don't expect. It's kind of like trying to predict the unpredictable. These are categories we'll talk about later on that just crop up and can really wreck a retirement. And it's just something that most people don't even think of, Chris, but they need to.
Well, as we begin really talking about this issue, why don't we begin with the kind of risk that most individuals think of, which is investor risk?
This is in a category that we generally refer to as systematic risk, one that, as you say, most individuals think of when it comes to, if you mention the word risk. We can call these risks, for lack of a better word, just call it business risk. They include market risk, the risk that what you own can lose value, a point that was clearly felt in the last quarter of last year when the stock market gave back all of its gains for the year. And not only just the stock market, it was every single asset class. If you were in stocks, you lost money. If you were in bonds, you lost money. And if you were in commodities, you lost money. So if you just look at the indexes, which lost anywhere from 6 to 8%, it was actually much worse than that, with most stocks within the index losing more than 20%. Bonds also lost money along with commodities. Think of what happened to the price of energy, which dropped 40% in a period of less than 2 months. So the market loss of your investments is the most common risk that most individuals will think about. Now, the next business risk is something we call issuer risk. And this pertains to, let's say, a company bond or a stock you own, whether you own it individually or it is owned by a fund or an ETF, the company or the bond goes bankrupt. Think back to the dot-com bust, when you had all these internet companies that were going public. They had no earnings, they had no sales, and of course, when the dot-com bubble burst, they went bankrupt and under. Think of, for example, the financial crisis, when many companies went broke, probably one of the worst financial crises we've had since probably back, you'd have to go back to the Great Depression, but you had big major companies like Merrill Lynch, AIG, and Lehman Brothers that went under during the financial crisis and had to be rescued or were merged into other companies. And then here's one that took a lot of people by surprise. There's the income risk, and this can come in several ways. Think of the Fed driving down interest rates to the lowest levels in history. That's what happened between 2007 and 2016. You know, it wasn't too far back, Chris, only less than 3 years ago. that the interest on a 10-year treasury got down to 1.3%. So what happened to your income if you were invested in a bond fund or a bond ETF? You thought you were going to get steady income. Well, that income was decreased as interest that the bond fund or the ETF, as they rolled those bonds over, they were getting lower and lower interest rates, which means they reduced your dividends. So the income that you counted on actually declined. And it's been that way, Chris, for the last two decades.
Well, and what about political risks? I mean, there's been so much rancor on the Hill, and we normally think of political risks like elsewhere in the world, like Venezuela, Greece, or Italy. How do political risks factor?
You know, this is a big one, and we have lots of it here in the U.S. now. Let's begin with the Fed. Right now, the Fed is on pause, but that may not last long if the economy improves, so there's always the risk of a Fed policy mistake that causes a recession and accompanying bear market, in which case the investments that you own lose their value and could put any retirement plan at risk due to the adverse effects of drawing down assets during a market downturn. For many of you who are on what I call systematic withdrawal plans, where you're pulling out 3, 4, 5% of your assets, think of what's happening when the market is negative, meaning you actually aren't making money on your assets. And secondly, those assets are going down in value, so you're liquidating them at a regular rate while they're declining. And then, of course, there's the risk that the Fed cuts interest rates to zero, as they did during the last economic downturn between 2007 and 2009, and they kept them there for 7 years. So your income went down dramatically, and this remains, by the way, a real risk, as in this rate-raising cycle, the Fed will not be able to raise them high enough to get a decent return because there's just simply too much debt in the economy. In the past, they would raise the Fed funds rate to 5%, which is where it was in 2004 when Greenspan began to lower interest rates. We're roughly at 2.5 now, and it's doubtful if we'll get beyond, let's say, 3 or 3.25. A recent Fed paper, and this you should take notice on this, because they're basically telling you what their options are given the next downturn. They're already thinking about this. In fact, the next downturn planning has already begun. The paper that came out this week talked about actually taking interest rates not to zero, but to a negative interest rate, let's say 0.25 point or 0.5%. And what that would do is it would force you, the saver, if you had money at the bank. Imagine this, you have a checking account, you have a money market account, and you have to pay the bank's interest. You don't think that can happen? Well, just think of what went on in Europe and still exists today, where many of the interest rates on bonds offered by sovereign states are negative. In other words, you buy a bond and you pay the government to loan the money. Well, think about a bank account that has a negative interest rate where the bank actually charges you. That Fed paper just came out. I'm going to read it this weekend. We'll probably do a show on it because they're already planning for the next downturn because they know, quite honestly, folks, they cannot raise interest rates to 5%. They will not get there. It would crush the economy. The concept behind negative interest rates is if you take your money out of the bank, you'll be forced to invest it elsewhere or spend it. And then, of course, there is inflation risk. Inflation has gone up every single decade, so the things you spend money on today are going to cost you more tomorrow. Now, this is a particular risk that hits retirees hard, as healthcare costs have been going up for retirees an average of 6-7% a year. You've heard us mention, I think we touched upon this in last week's show, Fidelity does an annual survey of out-of-pocket healthcare costs for a retiree couple during their retirement. It recently went up from $260,000 to $280,000. If you happen to be Larry Lotsenbucks, that figure could be double or triple that because, as you know now, there are 5 tiers of pricing for Medicare. It can go from $109 to almost $500. And here's a big one. There is also tax risk, which could become a major factor in the next election. There are numerous proposals by the Democrats right now to raise income tax rates to 70%, estate taxes to reduce the exemption from its current level of 11.4 back down to $3.5 million, plus raise the rates up to 45 or 50%, raise corporate taxes back up to 28% to 30%. And here's one that is getting very popular, and a lot more Democrats are talking about it, is raising the payroll tax on Social Security from 12.3% to 14.8%. That's roughly an additional 2.5%, and it doesn't stop there. It would be basically on all your income, especially over $400,000. Right now, I think the cap on Social Security taxes is $132,000. They would lift the caps. And remember, what you pay in Social Security and Medicare tax, that is non-deductible. So one thing that has come about as a result of the Republican tax plan, you've lost many of your itemized deductions. We'll talk about that in a minute. From your estate taxes, caps on property taxes, you lost miscellaneous deductions, and you also have a cap on mortgage expense to only $750,000. There's also a proposed wealth tax coming from Senator Warren, who wants to slap a 2 to 3% wealth tax on wealthy individuals. There's also carbon taxes and gasoline taxes. So the combination, if these things were to be implemented, the combination of payroll taxes, income taxes, estate taxes could take 90% of what an upper income earner makes. This is a real risk that could impact many working couples in the near future if the election produces, let's say, a blue wave. So you need to take this as real, as they're talking about it openly. There's not a week goes by. Yesterday's Wall Street Journal had a couple articles on these new taxes, especially on Social Security.
Well, it's interesting you should mention this, Jim. There was an article in yesterday's Wall Street Journal highlighting the tax exodus out of high-tax states. In fact, we've had a show about this before, but states such as New York, New Jersey, Illinois, California. But residents of these states are flocking to Florida and Nevada and Arizona even, where there's either no tax, low tax, and a cheaper cost of living. And Governor Cuomo blamed New York's $2.3 billion budget shortfall on an exodus of taxpayers as a result of the new tax bill, which it eliminates state tax deductions and mortgage deductions and caps property tax deductions. Now, the exodus is also impacting housing prices in New York City, which fell 5.8% to below $1 million.
You know, we're not just seeing that in California, as the Wall Street Journal article talked about. If you look at the East Coast, it's New York, New Jersey, it's Illinois. Here on the West Coast, it's California. You know, it's interesting because that article came out yesterday, and yesterday I met in a tax attorney's office with one of my wealthier clients, and we're discussing transferring their residence to Nevada, as they own a home in Incline Village, in selling their La Jolla home here, which has appreciated immensely. And unfortunately, it is appreciated because they've owned it over 30 years. Anything in La Jolla has skyrocketed. So there would be some capital gains tax to pay on the sale of the house. But we also discussed a personal residency trust and what is called an ILET trust to help pay estate taxes and reduce the size of their estate to reduce estate taxes. So they feel the only choice right now, Chris, that they have is to move, because they pay a lot in state income taxes, they pay a lot in property taxes, they pay a lot in miscellaneous deductions, and they've lost all of that. And, you know, the mortgage deduction, you know, their house is free and clear and paid for, but it's not an issue. But state taxes, property taxes, other forms of taxes are.
What's your retirement goal? When it comes to retirement, you've probably heard it's all about achieving your number. At Financial Sense Wealth Management, we believe retirement is all about you. You are not a number. You can achieve your retirement dreams and goals. Let us help you create a consistent source of income, make the best choices on Social Security and Medicare benefits, and build your legacy for the future. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management at 888-486-3939. Let's work together and make your dreams come true. Call 888-486-3939 today. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
And Jim, as we talk about these different risks, what about unsystematic risks? And these are the kind of risks that most people don't think about, but they really could surprise any couple or individual at any time.
Yeah, these are the things, we call these the unexpected ones, and they fall into four categories. There would be spending risk, household shock, health care, and longevity. Now, two of these, longevity and health care risk, are the result of aging. Let's face it, we're living longer. I think I mentioned I have a client that is over 100 years of age. She will turn, I think it's 102 this year. And I have numerous clients that are in their 90s and late 80s. In fact, the one client that I met yesterday in the attorney's office, he is going to be turning 90 this year. His wife is much younger. So, but I mean, people just are living longer. A 90-year-old male today, Chris, they were supposed not to exist. You rarely saw that if you went back 30, 40 years ago. So when you think about it, the longer you live, the more assets you're going to need to carry you through retirement, as you will most likely need at some point assisted care as you age, and you may perhaps have limited mobility. There's also the risk of what we call a debilitating disease that could cost you more medically, whether it's dementia, Alzheimer's, cancer, diabetes, or heart disease, from the cost of assisted care to drugs, not to mention expensive operations. I think a bypass surgery today costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $70,000. All of this costs money and needs to be factored into any plan for the future. The other risk is a difficult one, which is personal spending habits. Now, we've talked about basing your retirement into three phases: 65, 75, the go-go years. You're active, you're traveling. Phase two, 75 to 85, go slow years. You're still taking trips, maybe not as much, maybe not as active. And then the no-go years, 85 plus. Your expenses are going to be greatest during phase one and phase three of your retirement. I recently met with a doctor client of mine and I had to warn him his withdrawal rate of nearly 10% a year was unsustainable. I mean, the stock market will not always go up over 10% a year. And what happened last year is a good example. The market went nowhere between the years 2000 and 2013, and he is in the latter stages of phase one. And a lot of the withdrawals have been for what we would expect during phase one. They've been for travel, the extra $10,000 and $20,000 that's taken out to pay for trips. But by spending money at such a rate, we aren't providing a cushion for the later years when their medical expenses will escalate dramatically. Now, some of the options we're looking at is selling the home here in San Diego, which is worth over $1 million. I know a lot of you sometimes will send us emails, and you know, you live in the Midwest and you think $1 million, that's a big mansion. No, that's basically a tract home that's about 3,500 square feet, far from being a mansion. But we're looking at selling the $1 million home and moving to a retirement community in Sun City, Arizona, where the cost of living and taxes would be much lower. And it would free up close to almost $1 million of capital, which could produce extra income. Here's another case of what we see more frequently, Chris, is just like that Wall Street Journal article, retirees are choosing to relocate in order to free up capital or lower the cost of living. They can get a nice 2,200 square foot home for close to $300,000. And their income tax rate will drop from California's 9.3% to 2.5%, and in Sun City, the property taxes are half of what they are here. So they're becoming part of a growing trend, as the Wall Street Journal reported on Monday, of individual taxpayers choosing to relocate to either a low tax, like in this case Arizona, a no tax state like Florida or Nevada, and also to lower cost of living states. That's the other thing the Journal pointed out, is the cost of living in Florida, Nevada, Arizona is much cheaper in addition to no taxes or low taxes.
Well, Jim, what about, you know, as someone gets their plan put together and they're trying to anticipate things that happen, but what about household shock? What does that entail?
These are the unexpected events that can include anything from, let's say, divorce, kids moving back home or needing support, or let's say a sudden illness or disease. Had a client, and talk about hardship, in 1 year, he went through a divorce and was diagnosed with Parkinson's. So we went through a major rework of his plan. Fortunately, as a couple, they had enough assets. But splitting the assets would result in different lifestyles for both of them. Remember, as a married couple, they had two Social Security incomes. As single individuals, unless they remarry, they will only have one Social Security income. And by splitting the assets, it would result in, obviously, less assets to produce income. In his case, as he would eventually need assisted care, we set up an annuity with assets that would cover his assisted living costs as he was basically uninsurable. His travel plans also became front-loaded, as in the not-too-distant future, he would be unable to travel. In another case, we had clients in their late 60s who became parents, again having to take care and raise their grandchildren when their daughter died early as a result of a car crash. So not only did they need to provide food and shelter, but also we had to set aside money for college using a 529 plan. Money that they thought would have been used for travel was instead put aside for college. Now, fortunately, they both loved to play golf, so that part of their retirement plan went undisturbed.
So as we sum up, this week we discussed several kinds of risks that retirees face, from the risks of markets to political risks, from rising taxes, inflation, to Fed policies that could lead to bear markets and recessions. There are also risks that are health-related, from longevity to a debilitating disease that maybe could dramatically increase your living expenses, from the cost of drugs to assisted care. So you do need to make sure that you have a backup plan or an advisor who can help you navigate these different stages of retirement.
And you know, Chris, here's the good news. With proper planning, it could be done. I have a client. He is now 88. We'll just call him Tom. He got a divorce at age 67. So just like my client, the doctor who got a divorce and was diagnosed with Parkinson's, you know, when you get a divorce, you're going to lose income. You're going to lose assets. But he got a divorce at age 67. He remarried at age 70. And unfortunately, his second wife died at age 84. Now, today he's 88. He's living in a nice retirement home with a one-bedroom apartment. It cost him roughly about $3,500 a month. If he goes over to the assisted care side, that would run roughly about $5,000. But, you know, as he said recently, he said, you know what, I don't travel anymore. In fact, when it came time to buy a new car, he bought just a simple import car that didn't cost him very much, paid cash for it. He said, I really don't go to many places. I just drive around to the supermarket or go visit friends here locally. And he said, I really don't do much. So his expenses have come down dramatically. But we created an income stream of roughly $7,000 a month. That includes his Social Security and two annuities. And he has a $500,000 investment portfolio that he really doesn't touch. So what we did, and this began early on before he got his divorce, is when it came time to retirement, he could have got a lump sum or he could take an annuity payment for the rest of his life, both for him and his wife. And so he took an annuity payment. And the result of that is he took it at a time when interest rates were much, much higher. They were back in the days when you could get 6 or 7%. So instead of taking a lump sum of retirement, he took that annuity, which he can never outlive, still paying him today. And thank goodness we did. Because when we recommended he did so, the rates were higher. And you combine that now with his Social Security and his other annuity, he has a level of income, or what we call a floor. So in this case, Tom is overfunded because he's not touching his $500,000 portfolio, which he just lets accumulate. He wants it to grow bigger. And if down the road his healthcare costs cover or escalate, then he's got another backup plan in which he can rely on to pay those added costs as a result of inflation. So Chris, it can be done with proper planning.
Well, coming up tomorrow, Jim interviews Alicia Minnell and her book, Falling Short, The Coming Retirement Crisis and What to Do About It. And she's one of our better guests. She also spent 20 years as an economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. She's just a great guest to have on the show. So please do tune in tomorrow to hear Alicia Minnell.
Oh, I just want to give our listeners a heads up. We've had a lot of requests for, I think it was last August before we went on recess, we did a show on these devices that are helping to manage healthcare. Everything from things like the Apple Watch, where you can get an EKG, it'll keep track or catch you if you fall or slip. If you don't answer within a minute, it'll call 911. We talked about the Zona, which can help bring your blood pressure down, and there's a bunch of new devices coming out from home gyms that will just blow you away in terms of their capabilities. Them also, we're hoping to get, if you've ever heard of a company called Omron, they are probably the leader in what you have blood pressure monitoring cuffs. When you go to your doctor's office, dentist's office, and they take your blood pressure, they're probably using an Omron blood pressure cuff. Omron has come out with the first wearable watch that basically inflates and will take your blood pressure, your heart rate. There's that. There's another device that can help, especially for those of you that are in high-stress environments, that can help monitor and help you meditate. I mean, there's just the amount of things that are coming out in healthcare that can help keep you in better shape and monitor your own body's health and alert you to possible dangers. I think I mentioned the story that one of my doctor clients, she's a cardiologist and an anesthesiologist, was telling me a story about an individual that came into the ER as a result of his Apple Watch that picked up AFib. And thank goodness his watch picked that up because it saved his life. So we have a lot of these things coming up in the shows and in months ahead that are really going to help you monitor your health and keep yourself in great shape, which is, you know, we talk about planning for retirement, but what good is planning for retirement, accumulating enough money, if you aren't healthy enough to enjoy it? Which is why we cover the issues of health here so extensively, because we want you to remain healthy. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.